Rarely do Black experiences get talked about in the maritime industry, and that needs to change. At Women Offshore, we have tried to be a part of that change, trying to include BIPOC on our social media, meaning Black, Indigenous, and people of color. We've also always tried to have a diverse group of speakers at our events. I want to see more of this in the maritime industry, and I'm continually amazed by the excuses that are out there to not target specifically Black voices for events and recruiting. Excuses such as, there aren't really Black mariners out there. However, they are there. We have our fellow organization of Black maritime graduates that Women Offshore signed an MOU with last year, a memorandum of understanding to say that we were going to work together as organizations. Contact them. As an industry, we need to do better. We need to understand experiences on the water, and that means all experiences. Today on the podcast, we are going to hear from two Black mariners in the women offshore community, a man and a woman, and they're going to talk about their experiences. You're going to hear mostly about the little things, what happens at the intersection of racism and sexism that's hard to talk about. It's hard to put it into words, often happens without other people knowing. You're going to learn about microaggressions. I'd like to think that you're going to find this pretty eye-opening, especially if you didn't attend our conference when we had a whole panel dedicated to Black mariners' experiences. So thanks for being here. Thank you for listening, especially to this episode. It means a lot to me that you are tuning in right now and that you most likely want to learn from our Black colleagues. Like I said, we can all do better, and that starts by listening and learning. This is the Women Offshore Podcast. I'm your host, Ali Cedeno, a mariner and founder of Women Offshore. Women Offshore is a 501c3 nonprofit organization supporting a diverse workforce on the water. So welcome back, everyone, to the Women Offshore Podcast. We have a very special episode for you today because we have two guests on the show. And if you attended our conference back in the fall, you probably know these people already. So with me is Raina Barnes and Josh Quay. They were moderators at our conference speaking on the Black Mariners panel and the LGBTQIA plus panel, and admire them so much as individuals, as mariners in the industry, and want to learn from their experiences and hear from them today. So we're bringing some of the questions back from the conference so you can get Raina and Josh's opinions and experiences. And yeah, welcome Raina, welcome Josh to the Women Offshore Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Allie.
Yeah, it's really good to have both of you here today. So can you start out by sharing your background, who you are, for those who are unfamiliar with each of you?
All right. So my name is Raina J. Barnes. I am a New York native, and I am a SUNY Maritime College alum. I graduated in 2014 with my Bachelor of Science in Marine Transportation and my Third Mate's Unlimited License, and then in 2016 with my Master's of Science in International Transportation Management. I hold my first class pilotage for the Great Lakes region, as well as my master's unlimited tonnage for the Great Lakes and Inland Waters, and my second mate's oceans license. Up there, I sailed as from third mate all the way up to observing captain with American Steamship Company, sailing between Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, Lake Huron, Lake Erie, all of them except for Lake Ontario, on break boat carriers, moving iron ore, grain, cement, salt, coal. And then recently I transitioned to academia, working at SUNY Maritime College in the Marine Transportation Department, where I'm teaching currently bridge resource management, running the simulator labs, as well as last semester I taught pilotage and ship handling.
Awesome. Thanks, Raina. And Josh?
So, Allie, I went to Kings Point with you and graduated in your class in, I'll date myself here, in 2008. After I graduated, so I graduated with my third mate and commissioned into the Navy Reserve. And then from there, I started working for a company called Auto Candies in the Gulf of Mexico. And I went from the Gulf of Mexico with them to working offshore India, upgraded my second mate's license somewhere in there, finished the India project and went to work for them in Africa for a little bit. And then after Africa, switched companies to Noble Drilling. Worked with them in Singapore for a while and then transitioned that project into Brazil. And after five and a half years working in the maritime industry, I decided that I wanted to have a career change so that I wasn't gone for, you know, between 6 and 8 months of the year. And so I decided to go back to law school and moved from where my full-time residence was in Los Angeles, California, to St. Louis, Missouri. And then in St. Louis, I graduated from the Washington University School of Law in 2016 and became a lawyer. And now I'm an attorney at a law firm called Murphy Pearson in Los Angeles and practicing law here. Concurrent to all of that, I stayed in the Navy Reserve. So, you know, the Navy Reserve is at this point probably my closest connection to the Navy. And so I'm a strategic sealift officer in that capacity. And I've stuck with it. I never thought that I was going to be that guy that did the 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. But I am as much that guy as anybody else. And so I don't know what it is going on 14 years now. You know, Lieutenant Commander Quay is still doing his Navy commitment. And so in that time through law school, I've continued to stay pretty engaged with the maritime industry here in the San Diego, Los Angeles, West Coast area.
Yeah, great. You both of you are so accomplished. You have amazing experiences on the water and on land, and you have so much to share with us today. So let's dig into some of these questions. One of the things that we talked about at the conference that I think is really important, and it was a new topic for many people, was intersectionalism, how someone of color, a Black person, can be at an intersection where they're at the intersection of racism and sexism. And I know that that plays a part in the maritime industry. So do you want to talk about that and what you've seen in the industry based on your own experiences? What does intersectionalism look like to you? Raina, you want to start?
Sure. So obviously I am on the intersection of both gender and race. So most cases with me in the maritime industry, I've experienced sailing a pick of one or the other. So people see me, you automatically can assume that I am a Black woman or a Black identifying woman, you know, and I try not to. You have people that lead with their genders and lead with their race and lead. I just try to show up as me, but you're as me, I'm a Black woman. So with that, I've had experiences where people have decided to go. They're going to approach me as either a Black person or as a woman, not as both. So I would still experience, say, all the sexist jokes that you could possibly hear amongst men, depending on their decorum or the amount of manners they have, the jokes would range, but I would get a plethora of different varying sexist jokes because they didn't want to go ahead and choose the racist jokes or the prejudiced jokes, but they would choose the sexist ones. Did I know that they were very capable of choosing the racist ones? Yes, because they would choose other races sometimes to have jokes about, or other ethnicities sometimes to have jokes about. And I would have to like either come out of the shell and box that I put myself in for my own emotional and mental safety and say something or flash a look their way so they can understand they're crossing a line, or just file away. This person is this way. And if he's this way about that ethnicity, then he's most likely this way about mine when I'm not around. But it's usually one or the other. I'm either standing there as a Black person or I'm standing there as a woman. And in most cases, most people are more comfortable with me standing there as a Black person. and just not, they would know like there are some things that you just don't say to a woman, but on the other hand, it would truly range. So that was my experience still to this day as a Black woman. I mean, I don't get the general assumption that I'm in this industry that, you know, I've had somebody recently mistake me for, and I have nothing against them, but, or nothing against like admin workers or payroll or on campus, on this campus, mistake me for them or for an admin worker or everything else. I literally went through every single department except for that I'm a professor in a marine transportation department on campus.
Right. And a captain, right? Like, yeah.
Right. But because I don't look like what the stereotypical, and that sucks because then you're not, if you're not seeing that I can look like this and be in this industry, then what are you saying to our students?
So, yeah. Especially a young Black woman.
Right. Right. So in most cases I do get the, they pick with me, you're Black, you're a woman. You can't be both. You can't stand there as both, because then they wouldn't be able to feel comfortable to speak around you.
Right. God. Yeah. What about you, Josh?
You know, Raina, it's so interesting, and I'm so grateful to have you on here as a Black woman, because when it comes to discussing intersectionality, I think that Black women, they're just very uniquely positioned to appreciate the challenges that come with having to approach things on two different fronts, that being gender and race. And, you know, I've only been able to recently, and I say recently, I'll qualify that, like within the last 5-7 years, appreciate my male privilege, because I was always in a position, I was always in an industry where being a male was, frankly, being a male was a benefit. It was very normative to be a male at the Merchant Marine Academy. It was very normative to be a male on the ship or in the Navy Reserve. It was only when I went to law school that I realized, you know, 55% of my law school class was female. And that opened my eyes to many of the challenges that my female colleagues were experiencing. Now, there were certainly instances when I was shipping where I experienced firsthand how painful it can be, how difficult it can be, and how, frankly, how challenging it can be to be functioning as a female mariner or as a female professional in the maritime industry. But it really wasn't until I stepped away from the maritime industry, until I stepped away from shipping, that I was able to appreciate those challenges that women, and especially women of color, have in our industry. For me, you know, I was raised by two women. My parents are gay, and so it was always very comforting for me to have women on the ship, because both of my parents also were professionals who, they had those degrees, they had those jobs of responsibility. And so I always looked at them as figures of authority in my life. And so it was very natural for me to appreciate any type of woman in the maritime industry as having that role. It was something that I was able to view as organic. I didn't quite have to go through the mental gymnastics that some of my colleagues have had to go through. So working with women in the maritime industry is something that, frankly, that I always enjoyed, because in my experience working with women, they just got down to it. You didn't have to qualify as, hey, you know, I've been doing this for so many years, or, hey, you know, here are my certifications, or, you know, hey, here are all the ships that I've worked on, the projects that I've done. The women that I worked with just took one look at me and they just assumed that I was competent and capable of the tasks that I was responsible for on the ship. And so in that way, I don't believe that I had issues addressing the intersectionality when I was working with women. However, when I was working with other guys, there was definitely that element of, you know, Josh, are you going to be good enough at what you do because you are Black? Like I said, my very first job was working at a family-owned company in the Gulf of Mexico. and their office was down in the bayou of Louisiana. You know, and there were definitely individuals working within that company that I had to sort of win over. And I don't know exactly why I had to win those individuals over, but I know that I did. And, you know, just looking at them and looking at me, I realized that, you know, there is a difference here because I was working with colleagues from the Merchant Marine Academy. We had the same qualifications, we did the same job, and we did the same job in the exact same way. But for whatever reason, you know, they just didn't like how I pulled the ship into the slip that time, or they just didn't like how I did my paperwork at the end of my watch. Or, you know, I just can't really figure out, Josh, why you would change the Excel spreadsheet, even though you made it better, because we've been doing it for so long this way. And I didn't ever have to squarely, except for a few times, have to squarely address the issue of my race. But I know that when I did leave that company, I took very valuable lessons with me that I applied to my next employer.
Yeah. Oh. Gosh, you both have gone through a lot. And thank you for sharing these experiences today, even though they're quite difficult probably for you to talk about. What about microaggressions? That's another topic that is new to some people. Have you experienced microaggressions? I bet you have. And Raina, do you want to define what microaggressions are?
Sure. So microaggressions, they're not aggressive. Clearly, right? So microaggressions pretty much are just things that are said by people that might slightly or subtly address their prejudice or their whatever bias they may hold against you. And instead of being blatant with it, it might just be a joke in passing or a random comment, something that would not automatically be perceived by all as insulting or hurtful or troubling or problematic, but because it might be coming from a biased place as well as it's being directed specifically to you as an underrepresented member of the community, then it can be perceived as a microaggression. For example, if a Black woman comes in to work with her hair done differently, and someone says, oh, wow, your hair is that long? I didn't know your hair is that long. Or, oh, I like it when your hair is a lot straighter. And she might have her hair in an afro. That's kind of a microaggression. Or asking a tall Black man, do you play basketball? Just automatically assuming that they're great at sports. That's a microaggression. They might not even be able to catch a basketball, but you can't assume because of their height and their race and their gender that that is what it is. There's microaggressions all over. And, you know, sometimes we just need to be able to put them out there that that is a microaggression. And you might have not even said it with intent of malice, but just going off of your bias that you might not even be aware that it's actually there. And that's okay, but let's address it and move forward. Because if you keep on putting out microaggressions, they're going to go from microaggressions to just blatant racism or prejudice. So, yeah.
You know, another one is, can I feel your hair?
Oh, yeah. That's one.
Can I feel your hair?
That's or, quite aggressive.
Or you come into the office. You come into the office. Having gotten a haircut and, oh, you got a haircut. It doesn't look so poofy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are microaggressions because you wouldn't say that to other colleagues.
Right.
You wouldn't say your hair doesn't look poofy. What does that mean? You know, what is the value of that comment?
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes when discussing what is a microaggression, that is what, you know, if I feel the need to say something at that moment, I have learned to say, what is the value of that comment? That is me addressing it squarely with that individual. What is the value of that comment? Mm-hmm. And if they can't say, oh, I was just trying to be nice, or, you know, I was just, you know, then chances are it falls into that microaggression, into that microaggression comment, because you wouldn't normally, or you wouldn't often be in a position where you said something along the lines of, what's the value of that comment? I mean, that doesn't come up in ordinary conversation, on the bridge, on the deck, on the pier, you know, at the bar, in the office. It just doesn't come up, you know? And so that is that at this point in my life, with the experience that I've had, that is my de facto response is, what is the value of that comment? But I think that that's an excellent definition of microaggression. And I also think that people at this point in, you know, 2021, almost going into 2022, should know what a microaggression is. And so I appreciate that we're at a point where we're working hard to define it and to normalize that term. But at this point, I think that the term is normalized. And I would be very interested to know what other people who were not, you know, people of color or people who identified as a minority, I'd be interested to know how they define microaggression, because I can guarantee you that those people who don't identify as POC or as a member of some minority community have experienced microaggressions themselves.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What I know as being a woman in the maritime industry is these little things add up, right? And they're dismissed like, oh, well, it was just a joke, or I didn't mean it that way, if you do call them out on it. But after a while, it ends up being a much bigger problem, because there's these constant reminders of you sticking out as that minority, you being the token on board, you not belonging. And it can make you question if you belong in the industry at all.
That's right. Yes, that is exactly right. And that is how you create a culture, right? That is how you create a culture on your ship. So one of the main reasons that I decided to continue moving on in the maritime industry is because I was at one employer and I thought, it's got to get better than this. And while I was, you know what? It did. And I realized that there were several things that I had to do in order to make that a reality for myself. One was that, one, I had to be true to myself. That required me to accept who I was so that I could find the strength and the courage to come out of the closet and to become the individual that I am today. And so I made that decision that, you know what, I was coming out of the closet, and that was that. I wasn't going back into the closet. This is the maritime industry. There's people of all different stripes out here, okay? I'm not the only one, and you guys need to learn how to deal with it, because this is who I am. And so when I made that decision, I made it concurrent to leaving one employer and going to the next. When I got to my new job and I showed up as completely who I was, there was an instance where somebody had said something about me behind my back, but within earshot of the OIM manager. Okay. And so.
Yeah. And for those who don't know what OIM is, that's the offshore installation manager's the equivalent of your captain.
Right. And so they had said something about me within his earshot, and it was on the drill floor. He stopped the operation and he brought those two individuals. He didn't do it in front of everybody, but he brought those two individuals into where he was. And he said, I don't ever want to hear that again. That has no place on this ship. There are 160 people on here. You don't know my background. I don't know your background. I don't have time to hear that sort of thing and take my mind away from what's going on 2,000 feet below me. We need to stay focused, what we're here to do. I didn't know that he was having that conversation until he came up to his office. His office was right across from the wheelhouse. And I heard the door open, and, you know, there's like a pressure deferential whenever the door opens, right? And so you always hear, like, you know, somebody just walked in. And
you know who's coming and going.
Yeah. That's right. It's like a vacuum, right? And I heard that and I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, somebody's like, and then the next thing I heard was an expletive that started with F, and then the door to the bridge threw open and he said, Josh, come into my office. I got to talk to you real quick. And he brought me in, and we had a good working relationship at that point. We'd been working together for 6, 7, 8 months. And he told me we had some new crew members coming on board. And it was two new crew members that had been involved in that situation. He told me what had happened. And he said, you know, the reason I'm telling you this is because you need to learn this in this industry, that when you see things like that, you need to step on it. Okay. You've got to step on it. I don't care how you do it, but you've got to step on it. And I said, okay, thank you. And he said, all right, that's it. Get back to work. And that was the end of it on that ship. That was the end of it. The captain did come up and mention it to me and ask me, you know, hey, are you all right with all that? And I said, yeah. And he said, all right, cool. And that was the end of it. It was a powerful experience for me. And I think that it set the culture for that operation, at least on that day. And, you know, microaggressions are cumulative. Microaggressions are traumatic. Even though microaggressions are small, when you experience a microaggression, it is triggering. And as an individual who, let's say that, you know, I'm in the situation where I am the aggressor and I say something, I don't know how it's going to trigger that. I don't know what memories it's going to bring back. You know, I mean, it might not bring back a floodgate of memories, but it will bring back something. Whether it is fear of personal safety, whether it is feelings of not belonging, whether it is, you know, rekindling an idea of incompetence or imposter syndrome, which is something that I continue to remind myself, no, Josh, you actually are an attorney. No, Josh, you actually are a, you know, lieutenant commander in the Navy. You do know what you are talking about today, Josh. You are Black and you are gay, you know. It is something, you just never know how that microaggression is going to trigger somebody. So the fact that it is something that is small should not overshadow the impact, the outsized impact that it can have on somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. Really well said. Thank you for sharing that story with us. And we want to see more people taking that kind of action of quickly, as soon as possible, letting people know that the behavior is not welcome on board. So thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about managing stress, even from microaggressions. When you're on board, you're working like a 12-hour day or whatever your watch schedule is, and something happens. And how do you deal with that?
So I probably had to experience microaggressions at work, at sea, like at least once a week, if not more than that. From various different people, various different angles. Some of them, it was like, I just really understood after a while, you got this bias. I don't even think you understand how deep your bias goes. Others, I think it was a little bit more intentional. And some, after a while, I think I just started to tune it out. And sometimes, you know, there's that flee, fight, and freeze. And you got to choose the one that is the safest for you at that moment, right? So I would just honestly tune it out. And then after watch, I'd get off, go work out, listen to my music. And if the music was extreme gangster rap at that moment, like blaring from my door, it might be, or, you know, might call home and have to like tune back into, channel back into my Blackness. Go talk to the Black people that I know love me and care about me. And I might not even tell them what I'm experiencing, but just to be able to recenter on who I am definitely helped, because there'd be so many times where it would be like, I don't even need to be here right now. But I knew if I'm here right now dealing with this and addressing it in different ways and helping to shape the culture of this vessel, and I hope in turn of the fleet of the company, then there's going to be another Black girl that comes, a Black woman that comes along later on that might not have to deal with the intensity of what I'm dealing with. And that's why I did. And same with, fortunately, my job now doesn't put me in the line of microaggressions as much. But they definitely stand out, I think, a lot more to me because this is like home to me. And I'm hoping I'm doing the same. I'm hoping that I'm just starting to put some representation in people's minds that there's Black women in these spaces. Do not assume, you know, that they're not supposed to be here in this space. And to maybe correct some of the stuff that you're saying, you won't assume the next Black woman you see walking across the floor is working in payable or accounts payable or something. You're not going to assume that she's not a professor in the marine transportation, or you're not going to assume that she doesn't work in the marine engineering department. You're not going to assume she works for food services. You're going to be a little bit more careful of what you say. You know, even if it's just a look, sometimes you're going to learn that, ooh, maybe I shouldn't have said that, and walk away with that feeling. And I'm okay that I'm the one that's doing that for the next person, and they don't have to deal with what I'm dealing with, so to speak. And the more I might deal with it, but it's going to be easier for somebody else. I don't even know who it would be, but I'm hoping that it will be easier for somebody else.
Yeah, you're leading the way, Raina. And thank you for that. And I really want to introduce you to some Black maritime cadets that I know, that some Black women, introduce you as a role model for them.
Oh, my pleasure. That'd be great.
Yeah, representation matters so much, and it's really important for them to see themselves in the industry. So to introduce you to them would be just fantastic.
Anytime.
Yeah. So Josh, what about you? What about managing stress? What does that look like?
You know, managing stress is something that I still struggle with. You know, I went from one stressful industry to another. I think the skills that I learned while I was working directly in the maritime industry was to establish a form of community, and for me personally, and to run to that when I was feeling stressed out. And I didn't realize that that was what I was doing at that time, but I always went to people on the ship as an extrovert. Okay. Just, you know, full qualifier. I'm an extrovert here. So I'm not somebody who is always going to say, you know what I need to do? I need to go back to my room and finish reading that book. But as an extrovert, I would always think to myself, you know what, wait until so-and-so hears about this. Or, you know, I'd get on the telephone and call somebody. And, you know, we had that privilege to use the telephone very freely as a DPO on a drill ship to be in touch with my family back home. And so for me, community was important, which is the reason why culture on the ship for me also was so important. Because, you know, people are not always going to be available to you on shore. And so it is important that you work within what you got to work with what you got, try to make a meal with the ingredients that you have so that you don't go crazy. And I think that it was just always very important for me on whatever ship I was working on to establish a culture, as close a culture of acceptance as possible, so that when I did have a issue, whenever I did come across a situation that was adverse, I had a community that I could go to. You know, I know that oftentimes we look at the maritime industry as static, but what my experience was in the maritime industry was the more open that I got, the better my experience became. That's what I learned. So, you know, although I did have some growing pains at my first employer, and for those cadets who are listening to this, you're going to have growing pains at your first employer. Your first job is called your first job because it's the first of many. And there's a reason why you choose to leave it and move on to something else that fits you and suits you better. But you should know that when you do make that transition, you will do so having taken with you the skills and the experiences that you learned. So I guess that's a long way of me saying that community was very important to me. And by the time I left the maritime industry in 2013 to go back to school, I didn't feel as though I was an outsider. And I think the reason I didn't feel I was an outsider was because I was able to show up as who I am, who I was at that period in time. And the more I did that, the more the culture around me changed, because other people were like, oh, okay, well, if he doesn't have to put, you know, have his mask on, you know, all the time, then maybe I don't need to have my mask on all the time either. And the maritime industry is separate and distinct from many other fields or many other occupations because you work with the people that you live with and vice versa. And you have work conversations, but you also have personal conversations because, hey, I couldn't sleep. And so I'm out here smoking my fourth cigarette and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I don't even smoke.
Right. Right.
Okay. And so everybody has those nights where you end up talking to somebody over a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at, 4 o'clock in the morning for an hour. And then you're like, oh, I got to go to work. And so sometimes those conversations can be quite fruitful and very wholesome when you have a point of authenticity that you share with that person. And usually, towards the end of my time in the maritime industry, that point of authenticity was, hey, this is who I am.
Yeah. That's amazing.
What you see is what you got.
I think culture like that is pretty rare. And I'm glad that you were able to have that experience and leave the industry feeling like you belonged.
Yes. Yeah. I realize that it's a bunch of freaks and geeks out there. And I'm one of them.
So is the maritime industry diverse and inclusive? I mean, that's a great story. But like I said, I think it's pretty rare to have cultures like that on board. And cultures are so fluid on these vessels where, it can vary day to day depending on who's on board. What do you view the diversity and inclusion like? Maybe you could rate it for us of the industry.
Well, I think that this is something that all industries are challenged with. And this is also an answer that is very often said when addressing DE&I efforts. It comes from the top and it goes down. And I think that that is consistent with that little story that I told earlier about the OIM said, hey, we're not about that. And we're not going to have that on my boat. And we're not doing it today. That came from the very top and it went down to the bottom. And I think that it was a very clear signal to everybody on board that we are, yes, we're away from our family, but this isn't a poker game. Okay. We are out here at work. It is dangerous, and you need to have the trust that the person you are working with has the professional skill and the technical competence to help you if something bad happens. I think that if you approach issues of DE&I from that perspective, it's very clear that you want the best person for the job, regardless of who they are, how they identify. And I think that the maritime industry is very, very well situated to embrace that identity. Is that something that's happening right now? I don't know. I hope so. But it is something that certainly should be a goal for every shipping company and every maritime company out there.
Right. I think it's a mixed bag. That's what I've learned from the women offshore community is that some ships are really great and inclusive and people have such good experiences and then others are not. And this is company to company. It's not one company in particular that necessarily stands out as worse than the others. It's just a mixed bag.
And I think that's the hard part about it is that when you are in a situation where the situation is not right, the culture is wrong and people don't feel personally safe, it's very difficult to speak up and say something like, this isn't how it's supposed to be. I'm not here for this bullshit. And I don't want to do this anymore. That's a very difficult conversation to have, regardless of whether you're at the bottom of the totem pole or at the top of the totem pole. There's always going to be those institutional pressures that prohibit you from speaking freely about challenges you are encountering as an employee. That said, it always helps to somehow find that personal courage so that you can be the first. Because if you are encouraging, if you are encountering that, right? If I'm personally encountering that, then I guarantee somebody else in the room feels the same way.
Yeah. What about you, Raina? What are your thoughts?
I do not think the maritime industry is diverse. I think the industry at large needs to do better. They have all the tools available to them to do better. The people are out there. It's just now has to be an effort from not only the top down CEO level, the executive, the C-suite, but also the top down for the vessels, the top down for each department. There needs to be a conscious effort. And it's not only about checking the box off for diversity, because there's several different things that goes into diversity. Okay, checking the box off for women. cool, but you're just hiring a bunch of white women. That's cool. That's a nice step in the right direction, but there's plenty of other women that are also available. And it shouldn't just be one box, you know, like, okay, we got the box filled. Now let's move on. No, let's get people that have disabilities. Let's get people of color. Let's get Black people and Indigenous people. Let's get people of the LGBTQIA plus community. Let's get people with neurodiversity. You know, like there's a bunch of different diversities that can be addressed within the maritime industry that's not. And we're in the wrong era. It's no longer an excuse. There's no longer an excuse of ignorance. There's no longer an excuse of availability. Everybody is out here now. And, you know, if people do not know how to recruit diversely, then seek the right counsel. Don't just put it on your human resource department and say, well, let's diversify the company and let them figure it out. Because most cases, they're going to diversify the company, whatever they think is diverse in their head. There needs to be specific data supporting it. There needs to be benchmarks, just not the regular, let's diversify. Because you'll see companies that have made the diversity initiative, and you can see exactly what they mean by diversity. In most cases, it is not inclusive of all the shapes and sizes.
Right. Yeah, really great point, Serena. Thank you so much. And thank you both for everything you've shared. I just have a couple more questions for you. How do we have more conversations like this in the maritime industry? I know for a lot of people, approaching their Black colleagues can feel very awkward and difficult, but we need to talk about this. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think that it's important that the maritime industry has a conversation among themselves. It has to be a conversation among themselves, because change coming from within is much easier than change coming from, you know, without, outside. And so it would be much easier to round table some of these issues and have the maritime industry, the larger maritime industry, including the drilling companies, including the near coastal operating shipping companies, and the intercontinental, you know, transocean shipping companies. If they could all sit down and have a conversation and say, hey, these are some of the challenges that we're having. What are you experiencing on your end of the maritime industry? Because this is it's a really big tent. And so, you know, when I went from one employer to the other, my very first day, I was working with like six different nationalities. There were women all across the crew women were in every single department. We had female drillers. We had female DPOs. There were females in the logistics department and the HSC department. And we also had women in the engine room. So women were very well represented, at least on that one vessel on those crews. That type of representation is not mirrored across the industry. And so I think that it's very important that there is development of a forum, okay? Maybe if, Allie, if you could come up with some type of organization where organizations could come together and talk about some of these issues, that'd be great. But if those organizations could come together and say, hey, you know, this is the conversation that we're interested in having, would other companies join us? I think that would be really fruitful. Because that way, some of the skills that those companies who are succeeding in DEI efforts can be transitioned to other companies that are lagging behind, or companies that have experienced issues with, for instance, sexual assault. Those companies are much more likely to have developed tools, safeguards, and procedures that are applicable to that situation that they can share with those companies who are lagging behind in that field, in that department, so that they can change their cultures without having an incident serve as that catalyst.
Yeah, we've seen some of these ideas come out recently in EMBARC, which is the standards for taking on cadets that's being implemented by DOT and the Maritime Administration. And we need more of this, right? And one of the big things out of that in their long-term plan is for a DEI department within DOT. So hope to see more of this. I'd love to be a part of that and help shape the conversation and bring companies together. We do that well at Women Offshore, bring groups together to have tough conversations. And we definitely need a lot more of that. So thank you, Josh. Really great ideas. Marina, you have anything to add?
You know, I think let's take it on a smaller scale. I think picking and choosing and having discernment with who you're going to address with these questions, on educating yourself and being an ally and tackling the diversity issues and the lack thereof in your company, and, you know, learning how to dispel some of your own biases. Some of those conversations, yes, I would encourage to have with the Black people in your life, with the people that are being represented in the diversity in your, yes, have those conversations, but you don't want to tire them out. You know, we're already exhausted from just going through the world sometimes as a Black woman, as a Black person, as a person of color, you know, and then having to take on the burden of educating you when Google, Bing, Ask.com, and all the other search platforms exist.
Right. There's so much information out there.
Right.
It's unfair to expect our Black colleagues to have to educate us when we can do our own work.
You know, and you need clarification. Sure. Let's have the conversation. But if you already been walking around being a biased person, being prejudiced, if you know you tell jokes that are not professional in areas where you should not be telling these jokes, understand that if you approach a person that those jokes may have offended, or they looked at you the wrong way when you said that joke, you didn't really receive the complete outcome of the joke that you thought you was going to receive, you might not want to ask that person, because they might not feel safe enough to truly tell you the correct answer. Don't ask me about my experience as a Black woman or a woman in this industry if you ask me how come I wasn't married the first day I met you. You know, like, that might not be the best way to, you might need to ask somebody else that question.
Right. Like, to ask someone if they're married is inappropriate at work, but then to ask them why they're not married.
That was my first week. I was asked by several different men on board. And then throughout my career, sailing, the contractors, that was when they were first meeting me, that was a part of the introduction packet.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Those people are not living their life right, okay? And I'll just leave it there. You know, that is not a question that comes up in conversation when you meet somebody.
Like, ever.
That's just, it's not just unprofessional. It is rude.
Right.
And, you know, I think that, Raina, you hit the nail on the head. If you want to have a conversation about race, right, with somebody, or you want to have a conversation about anything that is personally nuanced, a difficult subject area, you just don't come in and ask them, hey, let's get into it right here. You know, I showed up an extra 10 minutes early, I'll watch, because I really wanted to put this to you. Okay. No, it doesn't work like that, because you wouldn't do that in any other area of your life.
Right.
Okay. If you had a question about a system on a ship and that question was very specific and detailed, and up to that point, you displayed to everybody on board your complete ignorance about how to even use that system on the most basic level, it would be inappropriate to have the nuanced conversation before we establish your baseline, right? Read the manual first, okay? Read the manual. Then we can talk about the submenu in the systems settings, you know, tab, okay? And it's the same thing here. You've got to have a baseline. And that baseline doesn't particularly need to be very high if you're asking questions to somebody like, why aren't you married?
Yeah, or, you right. know, like, if you see something, for example, if you see some kind of commentary that comes up on the news, I, as a Black person, I don't need to be your fact checker. It's okay. We don't have to have that conversation about it. Now, I'm not saying don't ever speak to me about it, but pick and choose your days, okay? And read the room, use discernment, use common sense. Don't think that while I'm conning a vessel, you know, up and down the river that it's time to have a cultural examination. Like, we don't need it. But like, in the position that I am in now, that I signed up for, I am more than comfortable to have these conversations. You know, I know that there's a level of education and enlightenment that needs to be placed in this industry. I'm saying I'm comfortable with having these conversations. Does not mean that the next Black woman that walks into this room might be feeling the same way, you know, and that has to be understood. We are all, just because we're all in this race together and we're all the same, does not mean we're all trying to be advocates and we're all trying to be spokespersons and we're all trying to be educators. Some of us are just sometimes trying to get through life day by day. And being your Black History Month teacher does not mean it's not something that I signed up for, you know?
Did you not want to answer that question about, well, why do we need Juneteenth as a holiday?
What is Juneteenth? Let's get to this. What is Juneteenth? That is an explanation, you know, and then why do we need it? Those are things we can Google. What is microaggression? Right. We can Google it, but yes, like right now, listen to a podcast. Those podcasts exist, you know, like, there's so much in 2021 that is available for free at your fingertips if you want to know, that you don't have to go and then burden someone else in their human experience through life with your ignorance.
Right. Yeah. Well said. Thank you both for having this conversation with me today and sharing your experiences. You didn't have to do that. So thank you both so much. Is there anything else you want to share? Anything you want to end on?
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Allie, about anything. And thank you for creating this. I hope that I thank you enough, but thank you so much for creating this organization that has grown to include so many safe spaces for all of us, right? I mean, there's safe spaces for companies to come in here and tackle difficult issues. There are safe spaces for individuals to come in here, for different communities to come in here and tackle difficult issues and to have crucial conversations. You know, really just thank you so much for having me on today. And I appreciate very much. And, you know, I continue to support you. And I hope that I am an ally for women offshore.
You are. Thank you, Josh. You've been a huge ally. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity. I already told you this several times. And I would like people to really be able to take away from this, if they don't take away anything else, just because I've had negative experiences in this industry does not mean that I don't love this industry. I'm just ready for this industry to do better. And if I can assist in the industry doing better by all people so that we can all have safe human experiences while we're both at work and at home, then I feel like I'm doing right. So thank you for the opportunity again to share my story and my thoughts.
Again, thank you so much, Rena. And thank you, Josh, as well. This is an excellent conversation, and I really appreciate this. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Women Offshore Podcast. What did you think of the show? Leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Additionally, if you want to propel Women Offshore forward, please visit womenoffshore.org or womenoffshore.shop. Make a donation or purchase some swag. Until next time, stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.